suggest that, doesn't it, by saying that the Hellenists complained against the Hebrews. So it's almost as if it's trying to say to us that they were being prejudiced against. It may be that it was just, as it often is in problems like this, just benign neglect. It's not that anybody set out to do something wrong. No malice or prejudice, as it were. It's just that you have overworked apostles. Remember that the apostles are having the money, back in Acts 4, laid at their feet. Obviously, they are overseeing it. There are no elders mentioned yet in the church at Jerusalem. When you come to Acts 15, you'll have apostles, elders. Obviously, you're beginning to see the church, local church of Jerusalem, organized. But remember, in the beginning, on the day of Pentecost, it's both the universal church and the local church in Jerusalem that form at the exact same time. But then the church, the message, that is, of the gospel is going to spread out, and other local churches are going to be established. And the universal church is not made up of churches. It's made up of individual saints. So it becomes something else. The local churches are going to be established. We're going to learn in the book of Acts are all over the place when Paul particularly establishes them. But whether intentional or unintentional, back to our story, the bottom line is the same. The widows were left out, they were neglected, and they were overlooked. So what was the solution on this occasion? The solution is this. Seven Greek names are picked. It seems as if when the congregation was told by the apostles, select men that can oversee this because we need to give ourselves to prayer and to spreading of the word, and let them tend to this, and they seem to fit the pattern of what later looks like deacons to us. Though deacons take care of spiritual things, you'd imagine a great deal of spiritual things that have to be dealt with in this. If men are entering widows' places, they probably had, some of them had wives, there was probably help that they needed in all of that sort of thing. But what stands out about them is their names are Greek. It's as if the entire church wanted Greek speakers to solve this problem, that there be no Hebrews involved in this, that we want you to understand, we want to solve it. And their character, of course, is especially in the case of Stephen, is mentioned as well. So how could we summarize this? I would think we would say things like this. When a church grows, it is easy for some people to be overlooked. Especially is it easy to be overlooked if you are an outsider. If you become somebody that comes into whatever group it is and you are an outsider, it is very easy for those people to be overlooked. And the third thing that this text says is that the church leadership took intentional steps to make sure that that particular part of the congregation was not neglected. Now, a lot of times when congregations grow, and where I am, for instance, and preach, that has become something that has happened with us. We are a congregation of a little over 300 people. Out of that, there are, of course, about 120-30 college students. Because that number fluctuates all the time. There are those that graduate, and then we'll have anywhere from 25 to 45 new students come in every fall. So there's always a flux. You may live, the congregation where somebody is may be that there's a lot of military. There may be a lot of change because of economic reasons. There can just be all kinds of things that cause churches to have this sort of change over all of the time. But a lot of times when a congregation grows, among conservative brethren, I've noticed that some brethren think that 200 is your maximum number. When we reach 200, then that means we've got a swarm. That means that another church has to start. And sometimes there's a good reason for that. But a lot of times what that entails is, and you can imagine out in California, and it's not that much different everywhere else, That entails a lot of expenditure of now more money. That now you have halved the income of a congregation. And you are now making the other half have to go out and find land and build building and seek a gospel preacher. And the expenses just ratchet up. Now you've got double. You've got double, except you had the same income to begin with. And sometimes that's good. An area is going to grow and all of that's going to happen. But sometimes, and I've run into brethren everywhere that just believe the max number is 200. And I think the reason for that is they believe that at 200, everybody can know everybody. Everybody can still be much. So you won't have this Acts 6 thing. You won't have this outsider mentality as much because we're just not going to get any bigger than that. And I always find that incredible when I think about that. We talk about patterning ourselves after the New Testament, don't we? And the first church was a mega church. The first church had 3,000 members, and that was men, and then 5,000 men. And it's not counting the women, so probably you're thinking of 10 and 12,000 and more people. There's no way everybody's going to know each other. And yes, you have to have small group types of things where people can connect because people need to be connected. That's the point of the lesson tonight. We're going to talk more about that in a minute. But sometimes I think we, you know, why would we want to limit if people are coming to the gospel? Why would we want to limit that number? They didn't think that way in Jerusalem, and I don't think we need to think about that either. But either group, it doesn't matter if you think of the 200 level folks or we can just grow as much as we can grow. We don't want to overlook people. And sometimes when congregations do surveys, I've had brothers tell me this. In fact, that's one of the things they ask, what do you think are the problems we will face if we do either? It doesn't matter, either side will say, we don't want to overlook people. It's always one of the things that they say. Same issue as Acts 6. That people won't feel a part of God's family, they'll be neglected, they'll be overlooked, and they'll be left out. We talked about that tonight at supper, just in a random way. I went to a congregation one time and visited, and my wife and I sat down, and there was a lady sitting in front of us, and she turned around and started talking, and I thought she was talking to me. You know, that awkward moment when you think somebody's speaking to you? So I started to speak back to her, and I realized because a lady behind me spoke through my wife and me. She's sitting behind us. These two ladies carry on a conversation with my wife and I sitting there staring at one of them, and they never said hi. They never said hello. What does that make you feel like? That this congregation has no idea, or at least those two ladies didn't have any idea. What it makes an outsider feel like when you come inside. One of the new members that you have here was telling the story about being in a church, and that the first time in their life they were truly outsiders coming in, moving there, not just passing through on visit like we were, but they really are going to have to find out, is this church going to incorporate them? Is it going to fold them into the flock? And that particular church did, just all kinds of ways, all kinds of different things, and how good it made them feel. But it said he woke him up. It woke him up to what he needed to think about always being like. And so that's what we want to think about tonight, because I don't care what group you're in, there can always be neglected, overlooked, and left out Christians. So if that happens, if this thing sort of comes to pass for whatever reason that it may be, then if it happens, if it can happen where the 12 apostles are, it can happen here. It can happen where I am. It can happen anywhere. And there's a couple of reasons that I would suggest to you that a lot of times it happens. You have family connections versus outsiders. The natural connected network, that is, people that know each other. And a lot of times, you do have physical family that obey the gospel, and they know one another. Just look where y'all are sitting. Look where you're sitting. You're sitting with your daughter, and I'm not saying anything about that or is wrong about that, because in my congregation, I did the same thing when I preached this lesson. There were three family groups I could point to. We have three sections of pews in our building. And in each section, there was a physical family that sat in proximity. Maybe the children sat right behind the parents, or they sat on the same row, or whatever. There was multiple family units that were in the congregation where I am sitting together. And that's a natural thing. It's just one of those things that you expect to happen if you have that. Sometimes it's people that have known each other for a long time. We say sometimes they're the charter members, you know. They go back to Ought 6 whenever this congregation started, but they know each other. They've had long friendships that have made them act as if they are exactly that, physical family. So there is this natural kinetic, connected network, and a lot of times who goes out to eat with each other? I watch physical families on Sunday. They go out to eat with each other, or they go to the home of the parents or whatever. Again, that's to be expected, and it is good, and all of it's right. But then you begin to think about the other people. And that is that sometimes we don't see outsiders, and they are looking at us, seeing us very differently than we're in our, you know, custom patterns and who we associate with in a local congregation, and try to get people to think outside that box. Every year when the new college students come in, I try to gather the strongest girls and guys together and talk to them. And I said, please, always watch the periphery. Watch the periphery. It's real easy after church is over for you to stand up and immediately flock to the friends that you are the closest to. And then just, you love each other, and you haven't seen each other since Sunday, so you're just talking about everything on Wednesday night. Same thing happens again on the weekend. You say, hey, let's go out to eat. I said, you need to be thinking about that person who seem to be able to meld themselves into the congregation as easily. They're not as outgoing. The outgoing people don't have that problem. One time, my wife and I told her, I said, now, I realize, understand that I was joking when I said this, but I told Will, I said, babe, we have to have the duds over. And I didn't mean anything harsh or bad by that. Here's what I meant by that. Do you ever talk to somebody and you say, well, so how's your work going? Fine. Okay. Well, so how's your family? Good. And their responses are one word. And you know, the difference between that and somebody that can just talk, and help things move along. I told my wife, I said, well, we can't just have the duds over. You've got to have some lively people. We have to intersperse some lively people. And so when we invited all these folks over, the lively people, about two of them, had catastrophes happen and couldn't come. And it was like one of these nights where it was just one word responses, you know, to the thing. People's personalities are different, aren't they? And you're trying to meld all of this in a congregation and make it work as a family. And sometimes we aren't thinking outside our family connection. The other thing is, and this is really something that applies where I'm from, and that is you have specific activities directed to groups. We so much have to focus on the college kids where I am because it is our work. If we can establish these people in the faith, I had a brother call me today. And he's a gospel preacher, a friend of mine, and his daughter came through us. In fact, two daughters did. And he said, three of my daughters have accepted Calvinism. Full-fledged, predestination, total hereditary depravity, perseverance of the saints, the whole nine yards. Baptism is not essential to salvation. We are seeing more and more of that. It's only a little bit. It's not like this just humongous rush. But I told him about a couple we're having to deal with at home that is exactly the same thing, almost. It's just a little bit of variations. So where we are, the college students are our field of evangelism. I have no idea where they've come from many times. I have no idea what they heard in gospel. So I don't know what their parents were like. I'm almost bet you there were one girl of our college kids signed up to take food to, because we have a deal when the girls are pregnant and they have babies, and then there's a calendar put up online and you just go and sign up. And I noticed this college girl signed up. So I went and made sure I found her and praised her. I said, why did you do this? This is just so atypical of college kids. I said, why did you do this? She said, my mama taught me. And I said, yeah, that's almost always what. Somebody taught you. Somebody said, this is important. And so a lot of times what college kids are, they are our field of evangelism. If we can teach them and solidify them for the first time in their life, mom and dad aren't making them go to church. We find out real fast, you know, among the college kids where we are, the ones that are strong and the ones that aren't strong, and they manifest themselves pretty quickly. They come with their parents at the very first time they're there in the beginning of the semester. But then, guess what? Then we have Parents' Day, and we see them finally again after maybe, you know, several weeks, maybe a couple of months. Our elders do a particular thing. They just go up and introduce themselves to those kids. And the parents are looking at them like, I thought you said you went here to church, you know. And they want them to know that, no, they haven't been coming, and you have the purse strings, you know. You still have the ability to change this if you want to. And so whatever it is, it could be senior citizens, it could be high schoolers, it could be the young married couples. In fact, we had a lady the other day among our young married couples, because here's the problem. We get so focused on the college kids that the young marrieds, and she said, we feel like we're being neglected, that we're being left out of things that we need to think about. And so it's a very easy thing that can happen in any congregation. So neglected, left out, overlooked, I'm going to say to you simply, is a dangerous problem. A local church is likened in the Bible to a flock of sheep, and the overseers, I like it. Better than elders, better than overseers, I love the term shepherds. So if you think about shepherds over a flock, you're thinking about someone who has to care about their feeding, has to care about their protection, has to care about their welfare, that they're not sick, that has to think ahead, plan ahead, and not just react to what's happening. Those overlooked, neglected, left-out Christians can be the most vulnerable people. In fact, many times what happens with college kids is that they stray into apostasy. If we're not looking after them, if we're not thinking about them, where I am, we simply try to adopt them out. We used to adopt them out, two or three, to each family across the board. But you know what you find out? Is about 20% of a congregation are the workers. 20% of the congregation are the ones that are involved, that they're going to be there at every step of the way. And so we finally put a list out and said, do you want to adopt kids? Sign the list. We're not going to adopt them out to everybody because we need people that are going to care about these kids. I mean, sometimes I would talk to the kids and they don't even know who their adoptive parents are in the congregation. They never introduce themselves to the kids. Again, whatever kinds of things we're trying to implement, what we're trying to accomplish is that we don't have stragglers that somehow just slip through the cracks, as we say, and that that they can go into apostasy very easy, or sometimes not apostasy, maybe they just finally just, if I'm not accepted here, if I'm not included here, I'll go find a church that does include me. So have you ever had somebody just slip out all of a sudden? You notice they were there and they've been visiting. Maybe they even placed membership at some point. But all of a sudden, they're gone. And we just kind of shrug our shoulders and say, well, you know, they just didn't fit here. And the problem may be that the shepherds of a congregation are not thinking ahead. They're not looking ahead. They're not planning ahead. They're not being proactive as the disciples, as the apostles were doing with the problem that we were facing in Acts of the 6th chapter, to not let them feel like that they are neglected. And so what can we do to make that be something that doesn't happen? And here's something that happens in relationship to all of that. Church discipline becomes meaningless to people that are not connected. Those who don't feel a strong sense of fellowship, I mean, what impact will withdrawal have on them? Because the passage in 2 Thessalonians 3, verse 14 says, if anyone does not obey what we say in this letter, take note of that person and have nothing to do with him, that he may be ashamed. That's supposed to be the drawing thing. That there is this connection. There is this involvement with one another. There is this action outside these four walls. And again, you probably know that that's what has to take place here. I've driven already, it seems to me, like halfway through California to eat with people. And you know that folks live a long way from each other, apparently. Some close, others not. Maybe a bunch live up there, you know, they're far away, but they live there close to each other. But that's true if you're in a church in Houston or you're in a church in Austin. It's true everywhere. And what are you going to do to solve that? What are you going to do to make sure that these people are connected to each other? It's not just here that they're... Now, I'm going to tell you, it's obvious y'all love each other. I was at a congregation one time. I'm not kidding you. The amen was said, if I'd have stood in the door, I would have been stampeded. I never saw a building empty any faster than I have seen anything empty like that. There was about five of us left after the stampede was over. And I thought to myself, do they have any idea what that says about this congregation? Now, the fact that they have to run you people out, some of you at the end of services here, speaks well. I think there's a good health going on. I just would say to you, encourage it. But you understand, we can improve, can't we? There's always somebody that may be neglected, and we need to think about how can we impact that. Because if it comes down to this, what impact is that going to have to somebody? If they don't feel connected, they're not going to feel ashamed of what they are doing. And so we need to think about that. So practical suggestions to not overlook people. To those who feel left out, if you're tonight in the congregation, when I preached this lesson at home, that young lady that was among the 20-somethings that are married, it just resonated with her. She came out to me and hugged me, and I mean, she never does that. That just never happened. And she told me how much that meant. And then I made a point later. We had a potluck or something. I sat down opposite her. I thought, I'm going to sit down opposite her and see if she says anything. And man, she started. And she told me all about what it was that made her feel like what I was preaching about. So tonight, if you feel that way, if you feel like you're one of those overlooked, left out people, then what did they do in Acts 6? What did they do in Acts 6? They went to the apostles. Now, you can't go to the apostles other than going to the scriptures. But you can go to your shepherds. And that's what you need to do. That's why they're shepherds. They're not God. They can't see everything. Even in a group like this, they can't witness everything. It may be benign, innocent neglect. I know some of the shepherds that are trying to move to a more shepherd model than a backroom board meeting type old-fashioned model of shepherd or of overseers. Take the directory and they have 10, 15 families to each of the shepherds. And at any meeting of those shepherds, they have to answer for their 10 to 15 to any one of the other shepherds. If somebody has a question about somebody, you need to know your people. Then they reshuffle it. Every year they get a whole different group. So that they come to learn the people that they are supposed to be the shepherds of the flock. Because how do you shepherd 200 people? I think it has a lot to say for itself. They went to the apostles. They went to the shepherds, as we would say, if they felt left out. And you need to do the same thing. It may be benign, innocent neglect. It happened just like it did with the apostles who are overworked and they can't see to everything. And they're not all seeing. They're not all knowing. Many times it's just innocent neglect that has happened. Accidental neglect, as we would say. Not a conscious decision at all to exclude somebody. In James, the fifth chapter, if I was thinking of a principle to say to this, it would say in James 5:14, is anyone among you sick? Let him call for the elders of the church. Now, I realize there's a particular context there, but I think here's a principle. If you have a problem that is spiritual, sometimes spiritual problems have physical problems, as it was in this particular context, who do you say go to? Go to your shepherds. Make them aware of what that is so that they would rather deal with it now. Wouldn't they rather deal with it? And they can deal with it before it festers, then all of a sudden they look up and say, well, where are brother and sister so-and-so? what happened to them. And they just went somewhere else because they felt neglected. Now, somebody in this audience is probably like I, when I was home, when I preached this lesson at home, I said, I bet there's a lot of you out there saying, I don't have a clue, Chuck Durham, what you're talking about. This is the most loving, caring group of Christians that I've ever been a part of. What are you talking about? Have you ever noticed that there can be both sets in the same congregation? Both sets can exist at the same time. Because again, it's exactly what we're dealing with in this problem that's looked at in Acts the 6th chapter, that they can be very opposite and yet it can be the same. And so what I would say to that group, to the group that knows they're connected, is the Bible has one thing to say to us: practice hospitality. Practice hospitality. Practice hospitality. If I could say it again and again, I would use the passages of Scripture that say it to us. Contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality. Or particularly Peter, 1 Peter 4, 9, show hospitality to one another. He's not talking about strangers that are out. I know that means love of strangers. And it was a particular field in that day for preachers that would have to come through as itinerant preachers, and they would need to stay with people. And Jesus sent people out like that, remember, and told them, pick a house and stay with it, and if they listen to you, then bless that house, and your peace come upon it. But I want you to notice 1 Peter 4, 9 says hospitality to one another. Uses that same love of strangers word to one another, to each of us. So he's talking about a local congregation, and do it without grumbling. So there's two sides of this coin, and I had to say this at our home congregation, so I would say it to you too. If you don't avail, if you're the ones that feel left out, if you don't avail yourselves of opportunities to connect to this group, then who's to be blamed? It's a two-way street. We always have college kids where we are that say, I just don't feel like I'm a part of y'all. And eventually they go somewhere else. But I always look at them and I say, have you made every effort to do what you ought to do? You know, it's real easy to sit back and blame everybody else and say they're not connecting. It's a two-way street, young person, is what I say to them. You have to try to connect too. You can't just sit back and be the wallflower and think, oh, they didn't come up and speak to me. Now, we need to do that. You know, all the stuff I've already said. But think about the young people, or think about your particular setting. And avail yourself of those opportunities. When people invite you out to eat with them, and you constantly say to them, I just don't have time. I can't do it. I got this. I got that. And they keep trying Sunday after Sunday. And finally, sometimes they just give up because they think, well, you just don't really want to go out to eat with them. You need to drop what you're doing. There's nothing more important than what I'm talking about. And go with them. Because they are trying to connect with you. So whose fault is it if no one knows you? It's a two-way street. If you are the ones who are connected and you feel included, then you need to intentionally invite the ones that are on the periphery and the new people. And I would especially say to the shepherds, I said it to the shepherds at home, you need to do it once or twice a month. And I said it to the other preacher, and I said it to me publicly. You people need to do it. Because we are the leaders of the congregation. And we need to intentionally make sure that we take somebody out who we don't normally take out. Because that's how relationships are built. Look in Exodus chapter 24 with me, if you will, at verses 9 through 11. It's a fascinating passage. They're at Mount Sinai. They are on the verge of the chapters that are about to come. Obviously, they've already, some of the chapters are there, building the tabernacle. They're going to be there for a year. God's giving them the law, setting up the tabernacle and the worship. And then it says, then Moses and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel went up, and they saw the God of Israel. Now, you understand, they didn't see God's face. Remember that with Moses in Exodus 34. Can't see him and live. There was under his feet, as it were, God allowed somehow him to be seen but not seen. there was under his feet, as it were, a pavement of sapphire stone, like the very heaven for clearness. He did not lay his hand on the chief men of the people of Israel. They beheld God, but here's what I want you to underline, and ate and drank. Isn't that fascinating? God made a feast for these who were the leaders of his people. What do we do every Sunday? We eat a supper that he is present at. God has always pictured, as he does the last final in Revelation, that there is going to be this great feast. Because that is, where do we ourselves know that we really learn fellowship with people? When we're sitting around a table. We're talking and having a good time and eating with each other. There is something very special about that. That passage has always impressed me. And so do the elders, the preachers, the deacons in this congregation. If you're not intentionally doing that every month, once or twice a month, you ought to do it. Then how in the name of common sense and God do we think the church will grow and prosper? And how will we go to heaven in the end? This is what God wants us to be and do. So what do we take away from this lesson tonight? People are not assimilated by accident. You do not assimilate people into this church or any church by accident. It takes intentional effort to reach out and connect with others. In Hebrews 10, verse 24, remember we looked at that passage that about, we always remember 25. 25 is don't forsake the assembly. Here's the reason. Let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works. And that's what leaderships need to be thinking about. They need to be thinking and planning ahead. They need to be me always focused on what can we do. We were once outside of Jesus Christ, but he intentionally brought us in and saved us. Ephesians 2, 12 and 13, remember that you were at that time separated from Christ, alienated from the commonwealth of Israel, and strangers, he says, to the Gentiles, of the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. But now, in Christ Jesus, you who were once afar off have been brought near by the blood of Christ. Erin Davis, in her book, Connected, says this, and I'll close with this quote. For community to really take root, the church also must make peace with the messiness of life. If we feel we can only come to church as the best version of ourselves, true connection will not happen. The gospel draws people. Once they are there, churches need to find ways to connect people with each other. The churches that are doing it best have an overt culture of we need each other. And that is very important. In fact, it's vital. And so I hope this lesson helps you. It is kind of a family lesson. So I preached it on Wednesday night. And it's what we need to be about and do as a local congregation. If you're subject to heaven's invitation, if we can help you tonight, if you need to obey the gospel, if you need to come and confess, then together as we stand and sing.